Regardless of what's thrown at you, you have to acknowledge the fact that when you wake up in the morning, you have a choice of whether or not you're going to live in that past. And it all starts there. It doesn't mean that you're going to decide and everything's going to fix instantly. It means that you're committed to being a little bit better every single day, right? And that mindset alone is going to start the momentum. There is absolutely no wake up in the morning and I'm perfect from then on out, right? But it's acknowledging that regardless of what situation we're in, no matter how bad we think we've got curveballed, we have to accept that in that moment, we always have a choice on how we're going to react.
How's it going, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thank you again, as always, for taking the time to join me here to learn and to grow. And I'm very excited to bring you this episode today because I feel like it's helping me go back to the roots of where I saw this podcast when I started it out, interviewing people from different realms, different industries, different backgrounds, to learn from them, to take, extrapolate from their stories and their experiences and their struggles and apply that to my life, my business, and hopefully share that so you can apply that to your industry and your business as well. And this conversation with a guy named Chris Turcotte is definitely going to be one of those conversations. Chris is a successful entrepreneur and businessman in the financial realm. But this conversation starts off pretty heavy with a lot of personal background information. Chris shares quite a lot about his struggles as a youth, you know, with an alcoholic, abusive father, the loss of his father and his mother at a young age, how he dealt with that, the internal struggles he dealt with, how he got through it, the mindset he needed then to succeed and come out stronger on the other side. All lessons that I think we can all apply to our personal lives and our business lives, our professional lives. So I hope you love this conversation. If you do, as always, take a screenshot, post it up on your Instagram story, tag me, tag Chris, let us both know what you took away from it. And I will see you again next week for another episode with another amazing guest. I know you're not gonna wanna miss that one. I hope you enjoyed this conversation in the meantime. I will talk to you again soon. Take care, guys.
Hope everybody's staying happy and healthy and flattening the curve and all that good stuff. I have an amazing guest. For those of you who tune in for previous episodes of my podcast or IG Lives, you know I'm always trying to bring people on, not just within optometry or the eye care industry, but definitely professionals from other industries so they can share insights into, you know, their challenges and their struggles and what's helped them grow so we can learn from them and also grow ourselves. And I have one guy who is a perfect example of going through difficult times and becoming successful. This is Chris Turcotte. Thank you very much for coming on the live, my man.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be a lot of fun. I see some people from the mortgage industry hopping on too, which that's awesome.
That's fantastic. So Chris, why don't we start with who you are and what you do now, and then we're going to kind of rewind the clock and work our way forward.
100%. So as Harbir was saying, so I'm Chris Turcotte. I'm based here in Vancouver, BC. And I run two different national brands. So I have Centum Financial Group, which is a national mortgage broker franchise organization. We have roughly about 1,800 brokers across every province. And then the second company that we head up is Real Property Management, which is the Canada's largest property management franchise organization. So the two obviously go hand in hand. And that's me in a nutshell. Other than that, I'm a grinder and I'm a dad and a husband and everything else I'm sure you can read about online.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love for you to share more, but I love that you are a grinder, you're a hustler, you're a motivational guy to follow for sure on social media. And that's kind of how I found you, is just through social media and then followed along, and then we happen to have some mutual connections and friends and learn more about you. And one thing I learned is that you've definitely gone through some struggles, and what I've, part of the reason why I've started this podcast and started doing these IG Lives, and that is, there are a lot of similarities or parallels or overlaps or however you want to phrase it for people in different industries. So we can learn a lot from someone like yourself who's grown through a lot of these struggles. So I'd love for you to kind of rewind and tell us where you kind of started from, what your roots were before you started your companies and had all these employees and everything else.
Yeah, brace thyself. I'm gonna go way back, but I will do it in a Reader's Digest version, I promise. So my whole thing in a nutshell was, my parents were much older when they had me. My father was actually 3 weeks out from selling his business. He had found a trophy wife that was 15 years younger than him, and he had already done the kids thing in a past marriage that he had failed miserably at that role. And basically found himself a trophy wife. He was like, look, I'm going to get out of business. Do you want to just travel the world after this? She was like, that's great. I hate kids. This is perfect. This is a match made in heaven. And then accident, present. Yeah. And then I came in. So from as early as six, I have memories of them telling me that exact narrative, that I ruined everything. And through that, the failed relationship part that I allude to with my father, he was an abusive alcoholic, both physically and mentally, emotionally. He kind of used all three with myself and my mother. And there was a bitterness there. There was a constant bitterness, right? He had settled his demons, or at least, you know, satisfied them with alcohol on a regular basis. He thought the kids thing was beyond him. And then I was a constant reminder of not only his past failures, but the fact that he wasn't able to move on from it. Here he was again. So he took that anger out on me. So that was the beginning. He passed away because they were older, as I alluded to. He actually died on my 16th birthday, like on my birthday. Had the birthday cake on the foot of the hospital bed type thing. And he passed. When he passed away, my mother had a PTSD stroke and lost all body function. So there I was in the hospital trying to hold my mom together, and then my mom went completely blank. I don't know what's going on. My dad had just passed. I literally had to take the ring off my dad type thing and try to get affairs in order, not knowing anything about it. Happy birthday. And then I had a mother that lost all motor function. So through grade 10, most of grade 10 and the beginning of grade 11, a lot of people didn't know this till later on when I started talking about it, and we're going to get into why I started talking about it. I would actually, on lunch breaks, I would jog home, and we only had home care back in the little town that I grew up in. We only had home care 3 days a week. So on a Tuesday and a Thursday, I would run home and I would change the adult diaper and make sure that my mom was okay. And like, it was a grind. And I had no surviving family. I have siblings from my dad's first marriage that are in their 60s and beyond that have reached out since then, but like there was no relationship. We didn't grow up. One of them had called when this had happened to really just inquire about the estate and things like that. So we've gone past that. We've grown as individuals. But the moral of the story was, when that all went wrong, I was completely and utterly on my own. No surviving family whatsoever. 16, trying to figure it out. And from there, I had a couple different decisions. Fast forward now, I took care of my mom. My mom came out of it roughly grade 11, so I guess I would have been 16, 17. But then at 23 years old, she was my world, and she passed away from cancer. So at 23 years old, quite literally, nobody, like nobody. And that was that's an influential time in your life. And I was going to university because my dad had made me promise that I would. I had no desire in what I was doing. I was going through for a commerce degree. He wanted me to be an architect or an engineer like he had been. I went the commerce route because I thought it was the easy way to get a respectable degree, but like kind of phone it in. I was on probation, academic probation and attendance probation all the time. But that was that pivotal moment where there was a dark period where there was like, you know what, and we're not going to go into faith, but you know, I did grow up with a strong faith. My dad was born in Europe, and we were Roman Catholic at their denomination. And it was a dark moment because it was like, wait a minute, how are you supposed to believe in a power if they would strip a kid of everyone and leave them completely alone? How does that work? And if that's the way it is, that's a God I don't want to follow, and that's a faith I don't want to follow. So I went through a really dark period where I thought I would take my own life. I had a little bit of money from my parents, but it was basically just, look, the odds are against me. Like, I'm not going to make it. Like, I'm going to get this degree. I might finish this degree. I don't know where to go. I don't have any support. Am I going to be the statistic? And that's where everything changed in my world, where I remember I was partying like crazy. I was suddenly like a little trust fund baby with not a trust fund amount of money, going to the club every night, desperate for people to just surround. So I would clear the tab every night and everything. And I woke up one morning, there's no famous book. There's nothing I read. There's nothing I watched. I was brushing my teeth one day, something out of a movie, head down, and I looked up, and I just remember thinking, the way I'm wired, and you're probably going to allude to this, I know you have in the story leading up to this, I'm a very black and white, blunt, force trauma type mentality person. And I remember looking up in the mirror, and they're like, statistically speaking, I'm probably going to end up swallowing the end of a gun by the time I'm 40, because I'm going to get bitter, I'm going to drink myself through this. And the way I'm wired, it was like, well, then why don't I do it right now? Why don't I just get this over with? Am I really going to be a pain in the ass for everyone I'm friends with for the next 20 something years? And in that moment, the way I'm wired, it was like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. And it was like, okay, well, now I got to get my head out of my ass and I got to fix my life. And from that moment forward, I had just a violently aggressive ambition to but it all stemmed from the fact that, like, it's all on me. That's me in a nutshell. And then Reader's Digest version hopped into the banking world. Not so important and not the essence of the call. But long story short, I eventually became a mortgage broker, went from being an agent to owning my own shop, to then expanding to 3 shops across Manitoba. And then the opportunity came where we were producing Toronto kind of mortgage brokerage firms from Brandon, Manitoba, if you can believe that. And then the opportunity came to actually become the president and CEO of the national brand. And that was it. We packed up everything and we moved from Manitoba to Vancouver and here we are. It's 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago now. So it was, it's another funny story, but I think it lends itself to this. We only moved because I come from a bodybuilding background. And for a lot of pharmaceutical reasons, I screwed up my body and we couldn't have kids. And back in Manitoba, you start having kids at like 22, 23 years old because winters are 7 months long and there's nothing else to do. And you don't have to save up for 15 years like you do out here to buy a house. You know, it's minimum down payments like $4,000. And boom, you got a house, you bought the dog, and there's 7 months of freezing winter, you start procreating. So there we were, 30-something, and my wife and I didn't have kids, and we were the only ones in our friend circle that didn't have kids. So suddenly, every party weekend or every gathering was at a pool at a hotel for a kid's birthday. Mm. So it really came down to the fact it was like, you know, talk about purpose, like, where am I supposed to be in life? We just looked at each other when this opportunity came up and said, you know what? This is a sign. And yes, came back to faith over time. You know, clearly this is a sign. This is an opportunity we've been given. Life isn't supposed to be here because we can't have kids. Let's move. Fascinating thing about that, and we're going to talk about psychology, is the minute we accepted that job, I came out a month early at the going away party. My wife and I had tried for 7 years, $40,000 in vitro and everything, trying to have a kid with no success whatsoever. We were told the only chance we'd have was adoption. We traced it back at our going away party. We conceived, but I didn't find that out until she came out a month later.
At the party, or like that night?
That night. Oh yeah, yeah. Can you? We throw a heck of a party, man. we throw a heck of a party. So yes, the after party. Yeah, we conceived. So I didn't know that. My wife didn't know that. She came out a month later. She let me come out and set up the company and kind of restructure it the way I needed to, and she knew I couldn't have any distractions for that, and then came out and said, look, I'm really late, I think we should take a test. If anyone on the call has ever done in vitro, it's a stressful situation. You've been through that test 100 times. You know that if you're late, you're like, ooh, this might be the one, and it's always a letdown. So we went into that test not even thinking about it. She took it and like threw it on the back of the vanity in the bathroom. We just kept unpacking. And then about 2 hours later, a blood-curdling scream out of the bathroom, and life changed. So, yeah, as the saying goes, if you want to make God laugh, make plans, right? So,
oh, that's funny. I like that. And now you have 2 little ones. You know what? Before we go any further, first, thank you again, everybody who has joined in. And everybody.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Thank you. And also everybody who's been commenting and sharing their thoughts. You know, obviously that was a pretty heavy story. Chris gave the very short version of it. But it's touching. It's sad. Obviously that's a lot that, you know, many people are fortunate not to have to struggle quite that much at such a young age. And yet here you are flourishing with a beautiful family and everything. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being open and honest about it. Because, you know, most people, I would be guilty of this too. I would have a hard time sharing those kinds of details. And I think that helps, you know, generally speaking, we're at a time when it's too easy to just put on a facade and act like you're somebody that you're not, or whatever you want to call it. So it's refreshing, it's humbling to have somebody like yourself share those details and share that with us. So thank you.
Thanks,
Chris,
thanks
for doing that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you mentioned something, we'll go back to like family and your work and stuff like that, but you mentioned something in there already a couple of times. And I happen to have had a conversation around this very recently with somebody who's in on the call and had met commented here, Dr. Richard Maharaj is an optometrist. We were talking about the psychology around productivity and success and things like that. And you kind of touched on a little bit about the psychology, your psychology in particular. You had that, you're black and white, you had that moment where it was like a light switch. Either I'm not going to be anything or I'm going to be something. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Can you tell me how somebody who might be in a difficult spot where they don't feel like they're in any particular, on any particular path to success, how they might be able to make that jump?
Yeah, well, I think it comes to a couple different things. And the biggest thing that a lot of us don't like to acknowledge, and we especially if we've come from a hard upbringing, it's very easy to wear that as a badge of honor. Right? Because it's easy. It's easy. I'm not where I'm at because I got screwed with X, right? And ultimately, and please, if anyone's heard the story, like, I live and die by this, and I think I can stack up against a lot of people. Regardless of what's thrown at you, you have to acknowledge the fact that when you wake up in the morning, you have a choice of whether or not you're going to live in that past. And it all starts there. If you want to wear it as a badge of honor, that's fine, and that is your right. But accept the fact that it is going to limit you. It's also on the other side of that coin, letting it go is just as easy if you just decide. And I know that's really tough. It's so easy for you to say, just decide. It doesn't mean that you're going to decide and everything's going to fix instantly. It means that you're committed to being a little bit better every single day, right? And that mindset alone is going to start the momentum. There is absolutely no wake up in the morning and I'm perfect from then on out, right? But it's acknowledging that regardless of what situation we're in, no matter how bad we think we've got curveballed, we have to accept that in that moment, we always have a choice on how we're going to react. And if you can live in that and you can discipline yourself to realize that, you're going to notice that moving forward is a heck of a lot easier. But the thing I find in talking to so many people, you know, they won't admit it, but you can see it through their personalities and the decisions they've made in life. They're wearing that misery like a badge of honor and a justification for why they don't want to act, right? It's like the gym. We all make up excuses of why we haven't worked out while being isolated, right? Oh, well, the kids distract me, or I don't want to wake up the kids, or, oh, I had to take this call. It's the same thing with our choices and with our motivations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a powerful point to make, that, you know, a lot of people do walk around saying, well, I could have been this, but this thing happened, or, you know, I didn't have this. But switching that mindset to being, I'm going to just continually work on being better every day. And having that, it's hard to do. I'm speaking from experience, it's very hard to do. But having that mentality of everything is you can phrase it this way, everything is your fault. I think that's kind of a Gary Vee thing, right? Everything's my fault. But also, you have the responsibility, you have the choice to make everything happen yourself. And it's hard to do because you have to acknowledge that A, you know, one, you have the power. That's great. I have the power to do the things I need to do. But then also, if something doesn't work out, it's on me because I didn't do the right things. It's kind of a hard thing for people to swallow. But when you do that, you start to keep making progress. And like you said, it's never going to be a light switch. One day you're bad, next day you're awesome.
Yeah,
it's always a work in progress. So
I think I live somewhere between the Gary Vee and kind of my own kind of ethos where, yeah, he's everything is your fault. My dad being an abusive alcoholic was not my fault, you know. And we've all had hardships that are not our fault, but we always, always, always have a choice. And the one thing that I did take from Gary, and we're going to get into that, and this is maybe a perfect segue, but the one thing that's always, for over 10 years now, almost 10 years now, has resonated with me from Gary Vee is your success is not predicated by your zip code. And that doesn't mean physical zip code, but like how you were brought up, that's a circumstance. How you determine where you'll be in the end, that's up to you whether you want to acknowledge that or not.
Yeah.
So I think it's not always your fault, But you always have a choice.
You always have a choice. Absolutely. And like you said, it's a perfect segue. So you recently had a chat one-on-one with Gary Vee, and you were saying that that's not the first time. I mean, you guys have sort of known him for a little while. So I'd love for you to tell me a bit about what that chat was recently and what kind of conversations you've had before with him specifically.
Well, what I we've had a history for since the beginning. At the beginning of that segment, I hold up a video he had made personally for my office 8 years prior. Yeah, so that whole video and Brendan's on here. We could maybe that's a piece of content we link up eventually here. But as far as 8 years back, Gary made a video like talking to brokers in my office using their names, like, Helen, this is how you need to do social media, this and that. I've been following Gary since the very early days. And the lesson we could take from a Gary Vee, and I totally get it. Some people find him obnoxious and one-dimensional and everything else. Like, let's call a spade a spade. But the one thing that made Gary, the reason Gary wins is he's proven for over a decade that he thinks with his heart first and he's human, right? And where that relationship started was in the very early days, he answered every single email. He answered every single message. Every single, like, anything, any way that you could communicate with him, he always got back to you. And because of that, we built a relationship. And I think the difference there with that relationship was I was never asking for something. So many people would, like, you know, hey, can you do this? Hey, can you shout me out? Hey, you could do this. And I would just ask him real human questions. And as I did that, I noticed he would respond. And then as the years went by, he'd respond. It wouldn't be a generic answer anymore. He'd be like, hey, Chris, hey, by the way, how'd that go? And I'm like, holy hell, we're developing an actual content. There's context to this relationship here. Oh, yeah. So he made the video for when he released Jab, 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 Right Hook. He had done a bartering thing. And millions of people thousands and thousands of people have offered him barters. But it goes back to the relationship, and he'd identified the name and basically, like, picked me out of the crowd, messaged me and said, hey, Chris, like, are you willing to do something? I was like, yeah, of course. So we bought some books. He made a video. We've had phone calls before in the background. It's always just guiding me through my journey. I think the Gary thing is a really good example of, like, just how relationships should go. At no point was I ever like, please give me something because you have something I want, right? It was always, thank you for your time. Like, so many times I was reaching out just saying, how are you? Is there something I can do for you? Hey, I know you don't have, like, a footprint in Canada. Is there something I can help with? Hey, can I advertise your book for you or shout out your books for you or your sneakers? Or I was always like, what can I do for you? Which ironically is his teachings. And then we got to this point, right? In September, we got to go out. Brendan and I actually went out to VaynerMedia, did a tour there, hung out with, had dinner with D-Rock, which that relationship has been phenomenal. Like, we're texting daily. We have some FaceTimes.
That's very cool.
It's been fantastic, but it all stems from the fact of, like, don't be a super fan. You know what I mean? Like, be a friend. And case in point is, like, if somebody has those kind of interactions, they're screenshotting or, hey, look what I did. That's not, like, a real relationship is not how you treat right. Something like that. Right. So fast forwarding to the tea with Gary Vee, the reason I brought up that being to VaynerMedia was his team was very pivotal in helping us get on there because of the relationships we've nurtured. So the opportunity came on to do tea with Gary Vee. And luckily they selected me. And the topic was something that I think is probably crossed your desk in the last little while, unfortunately, and a lot of people on this call. Gary and I talked about the fact that in tough economic times and the responsibility of leadership, mm-hmm. you know, what advice could he give on how to be a leader at a time like this, especially when it comes to tough financial decisions that ultimately we all have to make. And that was really the topic. And it just went back to, I consider him a mentor. He's always helped me as a mentor. You know, can I ask something cliche that might be sexy that we might be able to make a lot of content about? Or do I genuinely want to treat this like a real relationship and ask something that I genuinely want to know from somebody with his skill set? And the answer he gave was phenomenal, right? Where, you know, us as leaders, I'm sure you're doing it as well. Gary said, he's like, look, I'm looking at everything with how much we spend on bananas to candles to everything, because everything I cut saves another job. Right. And that is the responsibility of leadership. And then he gave an amazing analogy. Not that you guys want to click off this call afterwards, go check out the video. He leaves an analogy, tells an analogy that one of his fellow business owner friends had told him, where being a leader at a time like this and owning a business is a lot like walking through a forest and a tree falls on your leg. Mm-hmm. And the doctor rushes out to you and says, look, if you want to live, we got to take the leg. It's pinned. We got to take the leg. But if we take the leg now, if we urgently take the leg now, you'll live another day. And that's exactly what we as leaders have to do in these moments. And unfortunately, employees might not see it that way. They might see it as, oh, I'm just an expense, and they cut it. Any good leader, think about it. If you work for a company because you love and respect your leader, it did not change just because of a pandemic. The actions they're taking are still indicative of the leader they've always been to you. We're making those tough decisions because the whole idea is we want to take the leg now so we all have a place to come back to in the end.
Yeah.
And it was just a phenomenal analogy that he gave us. And it was.
Yeah, that was excellent. You know, I did watch that segment and I thought it was great because he was very humble and transparent, which I thought was really cool. I think he generally, that's kind of his thing anyway, but.
You're right though. There was a realness to it because usually he's got an answer for everything. And this was the first time he was human. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was like, I don't know, we're working through it, that kind of stuff. And that's the truth. I mean, realistic. Anybody who comes on and says, yeah, we got it figured out. Like, okay, that can't be true because nobody knows how long this is going to last and what it's going to mean for us in the long term, even when we do start going back to work. So actually, that's great that you brought that up because I really wanted to know what you're personally, because you have, I forget the number, but you have quite a number of employees that you have to look out for. So I'm curious to hear, you know, even a little bit, if you can share a little bit of what it's meant to you and your business and your employees so far.
Yeah, it's been tough. So obviously I head up two brands, but our parent company is four brands deep, right? We also own Century 21 Canada, the real estate brand, and we own Uniqlo Travel, which is in 64 countries across the globe. And you know, great time to own a travel business. so unfortunately we've had businesses that are heavily impacted, no different than a lot of businesses here, but they are big monsters with some serious overhead, right? And I think the thing you got to do throughout this is just be transparent with your team, you know, and I've had some very real conversations. You know, Brendan, for those of you that don't know, he helps me on the personal brand side, mm-hmm. but he's also a very crucial pillar in the marketing of Real Property Management and Centum. And he's been on those calls where I've just pulled back the veil, you know, a veil that most business owners don't talk about, but it's like, look, here's where we're at.
Yeah.
Here's where we're at. And here's the way numbers are dipping a little bit. Here's what we see. Here's what we're planning for. And just being as real as possible, because I find if you're just real and transparent, and you know, how do you rally a team if you don't give them all the details, right? How do you create a sense of we're all in this together if it's like, well, I'm just going to give you a sprinkling and keep you in the dark because I'm the boss and that's not for you to know.
Yeah.
Every employee, whether they express it or not, it's the elephant in the room. Am I gone? Are we going to be okay?
Yeah.
What's happening, right? So that's been the hardest part of this. Hardest part is it's a difficult watching their reactions on the call. And, you know, we do Zoom, and watching those facial expressions in the moment is heartbreaking because I'm scaring them. But then realizing that seeing that conversation evolve, and by the end of the meeting, we're all laughing and the camaraderie is there. And they're like, you know what? We're going to kick butt as best as we can in moments like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because it creates a sense of we really are in it together. You know, we all know the current situation and we've all got a plan to ride this out together. So that would be the biggest thing, but cuts are inevitable, you know, and it's not a personal thing. It is nothing personal at all. It's not like, oh, you were on this order. It's especially for large organizations, there's things that are critical to keep the wheel moving, and then there's kind of auxiliary positions or stuff that just makes the process a little bit better when times are good. And those are tough decisions, but ultimately people got to remember those cuts are being made so that we can all get around the table and eat again once this is over.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And going back to that Gary Vee analogy, right, you got to cut off the leg so the body can survive. As sort of a tangent here, have you seen that movie about the rock climber who got stuck? I think it's called 127 Hours.
I haven't.
It's based on a true story, of course, but the movie was actually pretty impressive. And that's literally what happened. A rock fell on his arm, and he was there for a few days before he realized, okay, I got to chop my arm off, otherwise I'm going to die here.
You don't want to take the arm, but it just, like, every business is like that right now. It's actually another perfect analogy. It's not a want, it's a need, because the alternative is you don't make it.
Yeah, exactly. And for us as a, you know, a couple of optometry practices, we don't have that many employees, but of course we had to have those difficult conversations. And my thing was, like, I look at them as family. I was like, I promise you, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to support you through this, whatever it means, whether we got to find some other way I can pay you or something or else, like, to keep you afloat, even though you're not here working in the office. I was just like, I will do whatever I can. And it was interesting. The same kind of thing happens when you talk through it and you're genuine and authentic. And then at the end of it, you're laughing and you're joking and you're like, ah, whatever, we'll be back and we'll have all this. You know, that's a cool feeling. It's and you know you're doing a good job as a leader if people are be able to smile and laugh in a difficult time like that, and not just leaving work like, oh man, I'm screwed, which is kind of the initial thought that they have.
Well, and even if you've got to go there, just a layer on that, like for anyone watching that hasn't made those decisions but feels like they might, there is a big difference between saying, look, times are tough, I got to let you go, versus look, times are tough, here is a letter to the standard that you're going to need to get auto-approved. We've written company letterhead saying this is the reason due to COVID-19, blah, 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 giving them all the links to all the subsidies and just saying, like, look, here's everything you need. You can get the help immediately and we'll see you again once this blows over, right?
Yeah.
I made a post not too long ago where it was, it's easy to look like a good leader when times are tough or when times are easy, you know, when money's flowing in and, you know, everything's just running on autopilot, mm-hmm. but it's those little differences, like you said you were doing in the company and we're trying to do here. It's those little differences that are going to make the really good leaders shine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent, man. One thing I wanted to touch on was content and content creation. And you're a master, man. You got some Gary Vee thing going on for yourself, that's for sure, man. You got a lot of posts on a regular basis, but it's always good quality content. And then, like you were saying, you also have Brendan who's doing helping you a lot of behind the scenes with the video and that. I'd love for you to give us a bit of a rundown on what you do to create content, how often you post, what type of message you're trying to get across. Actually, what I should rephrase it to is, I talk a lot within our industry about branding and the importance of personal branding. I'd love for you to tell us about what your brand is and then how you curate that brand specifically.
Yeah, so I think my my Instagram started as a personal journal. So I started on Instagram solely. I had a personal Facebook page, but originally I only joined Facebook back in 2011. I was late to the party. Everyone thinks I'm this social media person, which flattering, and you just learn as you do, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I actually was very Facebook adverse. I only got onto it because I was a sponsored athlete as a bodybuilder, and they told me I needed it. Yeah, now I don't look like that anymore. But back in the, I've actually recently posted about it. I think it's only like 3 days back. I posted some.
I gotta go check that out. I didn't know.
Oh yeah, so I posted some pictures of that in my past life. But anyways, that's where I got into social media, and I did Instagram probably a couple years later. But I was just caught up in like other people's motivational posts that resonated with me. I would post them. But where the magic happened was I would then in the caption put why that meant something to me. And the post would resonate with me because of something I was going, something that was happening in my business or something that was happening in my life. And then I just became transparent with it. I didn't have the level of transparency I have today until probably about 2016, but I would literally just say, this is what's going on in my business. This is the struggle I had, or, hey, I was struggling with this and this is how I overcame it. And I would just put that generic post. And then I noted that's when the following started. Suddenly people were engaging. And that was neat. And, you know, suddenly my personal diary was being consumed by others, you know, and I was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool. And then probably around 2014, I kind of lost then it became a chore. Suddenly I had about, I think I had 15,000-16,000 people following me on Instagram back in 14. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it was like, I felt an obligation to the people. And that's kind of where I lost my way. I would go searching for motivational posts and force myself for something to say. And then by 2016, it was actually when I took the role at Centum and I started telling my story to my franchisees and everything. That's when it hit that suddenly I was emotionally bottling up a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff even my closest friends didn't even know, because I always used humor. I'm a dad joke king, and I have inappropriate humor and everything else. That usually doesn't translate into my feed, and I use that as like armor. But then suddenly when it became very real, when I took over Centum was in a bit of a, I wouldn't say a crisis, but first day, every person but one got let go my first day on the job. It needed to completely be redone and rebuilt. And when I became very open, that's when it clicked. I was like, wait a minute. I felt a certain relief. And suddenly in that moment, I was like, you know what? Look at where I came. Look at where I started, and look at where I arrived. Now I'm the president of a national brand. I have no business being here. I should have been that statistic. Mm. And people are engaging and respecting my story. Mm. And not only that, it's created new relationships where they're talking about things they've never talked about for the first time in their lives. Mm. And that's when it clicked. I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I got to go all in. I got to tell my story. And if my story inspires one person, and from then on, it's been like a drug. It's like, I share everything. They're like, I don't hold anything back. So the essence and the reason for my content, to summarize it in the longest form humanly possible, of course, as I tend to do. So my,
yeah, I'm the same, don't worry.
Yeah, my personal brand is just being raw and transparent and as authentic as I possibly can, in hopes that by telling my story, somebody doesn't give up, or somebody realizes that, hey, wait a minute, maybe my story wasn't even half that bad, and I could do this, right? So that kind of was the basis of everything. So now our setup is, I have a bit of a process. It's not as clean of a process as Brennan and I would like. Brennan and I wish we had, a team about five or six, and what we could do, what we're doing versus what we want to do is two different things. But our process is really just, I will not post something if it doesn't add value or it doesn't mean anything to me. I won't just post something for the sake of posting something. Yeah. And then the video side is just trying to give people an intimate view into my life, understanding that they know where the life was. Mm-hmm. Right. And taking people on that journey. The newest challenge we have is I'm getting a lot of new people. You know, like even connections like yourself, like now you're a lot like me, where it's like, if I start to resonate with somebody, I want to understand their story. So I'll do a deep dive, but a lot of people don't. Right. So now it's, how do I marry the current personal side that I'm displaying, and how do I bring those people back through the history so that it's contextually there? And that's what we're working on now. My process for creating is, I actually, all the quotes with like my face in it, I'm actually making those myself. Like those are me sitting there. Every caption is me. Mm-hmm. Every single caption is me. I answer, as you know, I answer every single comment. Mm-hmm. And you've put two and two together by now. Look what it did for Gary Vee, and that's why I became a loyal follower, because I just believed in him that he'd always deliver. I want to be that same person for my following. So I answer every single DM, I answer every single comment, and I post a lot of the DMs. There's a highlight on my Instagram of things that people have brought up. Mm-hmm. I always, for their confidentiality, I take off their avatar and I'll take off their name, but I share it all because I want to show people the conversation, like nothing is offside. Just like I'm willing to share anything, I'm willing to talk about virtually anything. And that's what we're doing. So the mission now is just, how do we get as loud and broad as possible to help as many people as humanly possible? And now I've been gifted with the brands. I can help from an emotional, from a motivational standpoint. And I've learned a heck of a lot, being 35 years old and taking over two national brands in Canada in the financial industry. I was the youngest to ever do that. Wow. That sounds impressive, but as you know, starting a business at a relatively young age, that means you're going to learn a lot of lessons.
Yeah, no doubt.
Everyone's like, oh, he must be baller. He started early. No, that means I'm going to get punched in the face four times as often as the person 15 years my senior. Yeah. So I'm sharing those. I'm being open about them. Here's lessons I've learned. Here's ways I've fallen on my face. So now we're kind of multifaceted. Brendan, touching on him. So he had actually reached out to me. He relocated, and he should tell his story, and he does slowly. But he's very much, and he hates this line, but he's very much been my D-Rock. Like, he is my
I was going to ask you about that too. I was like, I don't know if that's an appropriate connection to make, but that's what it seemed like as well.
I tried to call him B-Rock, and he's like,
I like that. Yeah, he doesn't
like that one.
Okay, fair enough.
He's now suing me on Instagram or Twitter right now, by the way. I could guarantee it. But super cool story about a guy that hustles, and he just texted me. He's like, hate it. Yeah, thank you. Popped up at the top of my screen. Love it. His story, which he should tell, but long story short, he relocated here from Vancouver strictly to follow his dream of being a videographer. Reached out to me through Instagram one time and was like, hey, I just realized you're local. He's like, have you ever thought about doing more video? I'm like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I kid you not, we saved the DM because Brendan is a master of documenting things. We both have a copy of the DM. I was in the process of typing, I'm actually looking for a D-Rock. And he beat me to it by like a microsecond. And his was, wow. I could be your D-Rock.
That's amazing.
And it just hit. And the crazy thing about his story was he agreed to do it for like, I was like, look, I don't think I can, I'm not Gary Vee. I can't afford a full-time videographer to follow me around. He was like, I will do it for free and I will prove my value to you.
That's amazing.
And it was only about 3 months before he had a full-time job and, with the companies and everything else. And it's history ever since. So
that's amazing, man. And you know what, that's interesting. Cause that's something that I think Gary Vee and maybe some others kind of say too, is like, how do you get out there? Well, one way to do it is to do stuff for free to show your value, what you're worth, and then people will start paying you. So that's pretty cool that he lived that. And then a couple other things that you mentioned along the way, there's two, I always give people sort of my three pillars of building a brand, whether it's online or offline. And, you mentioned the top two as kind of your big ones, provide value, number one, and engage. Like you said, you engage with every comment, every DM, and that's how you build that reputation and that relationship with people out there. So that's really cool. And just for the sake of completion, number three is to be consistent across platforms and be that same person online and offline when you meet people as well. So I think you're doing a great job of that, man. That's awesome.
Thank you. And just to finish that thought with, and I don't know if you're the same, but the big thing for me as well is legacy, which I won't go long form in, but I've blogged about it before and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm 38 years old and I don't have a great picture of my father, and I never will because he's gone. And that's what I'm going to live with forever. Family history, and obviously I'm going to change that, and medicine and everything has changed. Male Turcots don't see 70. They don't. I don't think they have in like four generations. So for me, it's, if that day comes, and none of us know, I want a legacy that Piper and Bo can look back on, and I want them to understand what their dad was and what he tried to give and what he tried to contribute. And I want them to understand my story, right? I want them to understand all the ugly parts of my story, because I've spent the rest of my life, and I still do it today, now that I'm a father, trying to look back at my own dad and trying to figure out, is that why you said what you said? Is that why you did what you did? Is that why you were who you were? This is a documentation that they can look, there's one big documentary that they can look back on. And hopefully if I've done them justice, they can answer all those questions. So that is definitely my third pillar. The selfish one.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think, trying to build a legacy is important. That's actually really, really valuable. I was just thinking about that. The older I get, the more I start to think about, that's why my parents acted or said the things they did back then. And my dad's always said to me since I was a kid, he's like, just wait until you have kids, then you'll understand.
Yeah.
And definitely now that I have kids, I'm starting to understand. And my kids are still little, so I'm almost not looking forward to it. Too. Like, oh, that's why.
No, wait till the first time we start sounding like our parents. Okay.
Dude, I've already found, just talking to my kids, my daughters, and the things I'm saying to them is like exactly what my dad says. I was like, what happened here? So I'd like to get close to wrapping up here, Chris.
Yeah, of course.
There's always two questions I ask everybody at the end of every podcast. We're going to do that in a minute. But I thought there was a great question here from Richard that I'd like to pose to you.
Yeah.
What does success mean to you? What is your why? I feel like you could probably put those together. And has that changed? How has that changed on your journey? So was it something different 10 years ago? Is it something different now?
Yeah. So 10 years ago, and that is, I was watching that question as well. And I was like, it's your broadcast. I'm not going to jump in there, but I'm glad that you went to it. It has absolutely changed. So 10 years ago, I wasn't insecure, but I definitely wore the scars of, I don't have the average safety net that all my friends do. Where, like, God forbid, you know, you lose a parent, but, you know, you're 40 something, statistically speaking, you're 40 something, maybe 50 something, you lose a parent, there's an influx of inheritance and everything else. Well, for a lot of stupid reasons, that ship had already sailed for me, right? So 10 years ago, success for me was financial security. I wanted to not be that scared, because internally, I didn't show it on the outside, internally, I was that scared orphan that was like, uh-oh, like, what, like, am I going to be okay, right? So I chased that for years, and that was a big driving factor. It wasn't to have bling. I've never been a blingy guy ever. Like, look at me. There is no point in having bling. I am a bearded thumb with glasses and a fit. Yeah, right? Exactly. And I even tried to dull it down a little bit. But yeah, so 10 years ago.
I'm sorry, Chris. That was mean.
So are you kidding me? I'm used to it. I try to keep my head down just to protect your eyes. Although, although I have a feeling you'd be able to fix yourself there.
I would be, yeah.
So 10 years ago, success was definitely, it wasn't defined by money, but the definition of success for me was, I was married 10 years ago. It was like, I need to get to a point to where I'm no longer worried about our financial future. I want security. So that was really the flag on the hill, if you will. And that was what defined success for me is how do I create a life so that I'm no longer worried about that. And I know that if one day we do adopt or everything, you know, back then, if we do adopt and everything, that how can I be the family man that is provided and everything else? Success now, and I talk about this a lot, I've been very fortunate. I've been very good with finances. I've been trading in stocks for a decade kind of thing. And I've been very, I, you know, came from Royal Bank, and money has been my thing. I'm not frivolous, or like I'm not frugal, but I don't buy anything if I can't afford it. That includes vehicles. It's like I am debt adverse. I do not want debt except a mortgage. Ironically, well, of course I should want mortgages. So success now has really shifted. Where success for me now is realizing that I could have easily been a statistic. How do I? Success for me is, can I inspire and touch everyone that I come in contact with? And you really can. Even if it's as simple as passing somebody on the street and you say hello, and that might be the first person that said hello to them in a couple days, right? Because and it's going to get even worse once this pandemic blows over. So success for me is, success for me would be, can I improve a life every time I come in contact with it? Even in the most minor way, am I giving back more than I get? And then success for me, ultimately, on the personal side of that, not just selfish side, but the other side would be, you know, can I be the family man and the husband and the father that I wanted to be, right? And that's where I'm glad. I wouldn't say it was a happy accident, but now that I've put so much emphasis on the financial side, I'm in a position where I can go all in on making sure I'm being that husband and I'm being that father. And so my next big flag on the hill, yeah, legacy, exactly. It's legacy. How do I, just read in the comments, mm-hmm. you know, how do I want as many people at my funeral as possible. You know, like that's the big thing is like, I used to question my purpose, you know, going back to the why would somebody strip a kid of everything? I'm 38 now, I understand. Because look at what, like, I'm starting to see it. It's like, okay, this is why. And somehow it took all that pain away, right? It's like, you know what? Then fine. You know, I understand the lesson now. Like now I'm going to be open. I'm going to share everything. And it didn't have to turn out this way. So I'm just filled with gratitude. And that's the mission.
That's fantastic, man. I love that. Where you're at now. And you know, it's interesting that you phrased it that way. You want to have as many people as possible at your funeral. And that's a thought that had occurred to me not long ago because I was attending a funeral and I was like, man, look at, this is amazing. How many people have come so far for this person? This person clearly made an impact. And that was a bit of a turning point for me as well. I was like, that's what I want. I mean, you're not there to see it technically. I mean, hopefully I'm assuming you can see it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But you know, that means that you've made enough of an impact on enough people that they wanted to come and pay their respects. And I, you know, and on that note, doing what you're saying, like saying hi to a random person and stuff like that, that's definitely where I'm trying to be at now, is that helping, or just trying to be that person who every person you come in contact with, you're somehow making their day a little better. Definitely not the opposite, right?
Yeah.
And so that's really cool. I love that. Now, the last two questions that I like to ask everybody on the podcast. First question is, now this question is interesting for me to ask you, because I don't think I've had a guest who's had such a significant history, such a heavy past like you have, like you explained to us in the beginning. But the question is, if you could hop in a time machine and go back to any particular point in your past, you can share that moment because you're quite transparent in general, or you can't, you don't have to if you don't want to. But what I'd like you to share is the advice that you would give yourself at that moment.
I can think of a moment and I can think of what I'd say to myself. So moment would be, and I recently talked about this at our national conference in front of hundreds of people. I told this story. And I'll keep it brief because I know we got to wrap, but my dad had lymph node cancer. That's how he died. And then through radiation treatment, you know, his lymph nodes or his vocal cords were fried. So he couldn't talk anymore. And especially, unfortunately, on the last day of his life, you know, his lungs were filling up with fluid and everything else. And there's a moment that, you know, I'll remember for the rest of my life. With what strength he had, he grabbed my arm, and it was the way he looked in my eye. He looked into my eye, and I knew in that moment he was trying to say something critical. It was mission critical, and he realized he might not get another chance. And I remember, like, literally being like, what's he going to say? Right? And of course, I'm like, we didn't have a good relationship. So he had a look of fear and urgency that I'd never seen on him. And when he started talking, it was just a gurgle. I couldn't understand any of it. And so to this day, obviously now being a man, we look back and we're like, wait a minute. Like, I think I know what that moment was. In that moment, he was trying to make peace. And he was trying to say what he needed to say to try and reconcile with his son right before he died. And I will never know what he was trying to say. So answer one, I'd go back to that moment and I wish I could figure out what it was. The advice I'd give to myself is, this does not define you. Because I spent a couple of years with my head down saying, I'm screwed. What's the point of the rest of this? What is the point of the 60 years if this is the hand you're dealt? Like, seriously, like, there's no mulligan. So the advice I would give to myself is, this is not going to define you. Just be patient.
That's fantastic advice, and I think applicable to a lot of people in a lot of situations, so appreciate that. And for sharing that story as well, again, thank you.
Absolutely.
And the last question that I like to ask every guest on the podcast is, you've accomplished a lot, you've been through a lot, and I know you're still growing and there's going to be a lot more to come, but up until now, everything you have accomplished, how much of it would you say is due to luck, and how much is due to hard work?
I think there's an interesting connection between the two. It seems like the harder I work, the luckier I get. Right?
I like that. Yeah.
That would probably sum that up. It's no coincidence that the harder you work, the luckier you seem to get. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd call a lot of my life luck. So no, you know what? I'm never openly giving credit to myself, but I think I have to give credit to the lessons that happen in life. But yeah, I don't think there was a lot of luck there. But I do believe that the more you push, doors open. There's no, and I guess that could be defined as luck, right? Not to be cliche, but you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? Yeah. And that used to seem like so cliche. You're like, okay, Gretzky, whatever. but then I realized it's like fishing, right? Like, you want to catch as many fish as possible, cast as many lines as possible. And you had mentioned as well, like, you know, like, how many times did you fail on this adventure? But if you don't cast the line, you're never going to have a chance, right? So I think luck can be defined as giving yourselves as many opportunities as possible. Right? Yeah. One of them's going to hit. If you want to call that luck, call it luck. Chances are it's because your perseverance and your consistency.
That's a fantastic answer. And actually I love that answer because it does blend in both the luck and the hard work. They're both there. They're both necessary. And even more so because just yesterday, I think I was having a conversation with somebody about, you know, people will say you're at the right place at the right time. And that implies luck. But then I often will say, I'm like, I had to be at a lot of the wrong places before I ended up at the right place. And that, yeah, I think kind of gives you the idea of like the work that went into being lucky. So the more you work, the luckier you get. So yeah, that's fantastic.
Awesome.
Chris, I'd like for you to, if you could, tell everybody where we can find you if we want to get in touch with you.
Yeah, so I am everywhere. I am Brendan. If you're still on here, if you could put in the comments on the live what our number is for this next part, I'm going to announce because we just started it. But you can find me on everywhere but Facebook. I'm at Chris Turcotte _. So the handle you're seeing on here, everywhere but Facebook. It was taken. I will find you, whoever took that. So on Facebook, I'm at Chris Turcotte Hustle, I believe. But you just search Chris Turcotte, you'll find my page. I engage and answer every single comment. And then we obviously, if you visit my Instagram profile, if Brendan doesn't get it up in time, we just started a community. So I've just in my bio now, there's a phone number that you can text. So if you ever want to text me, if you want to get messages for me, oh, there it is. There we go. So 323-310-4053. So you can message me, reach out, and it's a cool way for us to stay in contact even when we're not on socials.
Perfect. That's awesome, man. Thank you. And any last motivational words that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is be kind. And I had said this on another podcast. It's, I went through Tim Hortons and I saw somebody completely annihilate the person working there because the order was wrong or something was out of stock and just absolutely ridiculous. And if you think at a time like this, somebody wants to make minimum wage, risking their safety, handling cash all day at a drive-thru window, you're out of your mind. You know, chances are you're going for your third coffee of the day because you've got compensation. You get to sit at home and do your job, right? So I think the big thing is like, be kind. And appreciate everyone, especially the people that are, you know, like that person's not working minimum wage because they want to. It's because they have to and they're willing to take the risk. So just be good to everyone you can. I know they can't accept tips at drive-through or anything or what you're not supposed to hand them cash, but just keep that in mind. Like you're sitting there as a luxury getting your double-double and, you know, don't think that person is nervous. So just at a time like this, just be as kind as you can to everybody involved. We're all in this together, whether we're connected or not, we're all in this together.
That's wonderful. I think that's a perfect message to end this call on is be kind to each other because we are in this together. Thank you so much, Chris.
100%.
Please reach out to Chris. He's a great guy. He's obviously got a lot of great information and great insights. Thanks again, Chris. And thank you everybody on the call. We'll see you again very soon.
Awesome, guys. Take care.